You're supposed to say the ones.
Oh, is it? I gotta say that?
Yes.
Public service announcement. If using opinions or other opinions.
Fuck that bullshit. They are my opinions and my guests, no one else's. Remember, this show ain't for Chitlin's ears, so listening discretion and viewing discretion is advised. This is a paranormal horror crime show. So the scenes and the sounds can be a little terrifying to those little ears and those little eyeballs. And of course, there's obviously cussing. I mean, it's me. Also, please don't do anything that these stupid-ass people do in this video or this podcast. This is for entertainment purposes and for you guys to listen with your ears. Consume the knowledge. And now, time for the show.
What's up, everybody? It's Shauna with Exploring the Paranormal Perspective. Or you can just call me Geeks. Everybody else does. Enzo is an amazing human being that's been patiently waiting for me to get stuff done. Hi, Enzo. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great.
The audience doesn't know this, but she's been going berserk backstage. This is not working.
It's not doing what I wanted to do. Why isn't it doing what I wanted to do? I need to play with this more. So, yeah, I'm going to have to play with the StreamYards a little bit more on the share screen side to see how to share that shit without you guys seeing everything else. However, on this side, Twitch, Kick, you guys, what's up? How are you doing? Hi, J-Dog. Help me welcome Enzo, you guys. Y'all come in and say hello. Have your questions ready because we're going to be talking extraterrestrials and UFOs and everything else. And Enzo, to start that off, how old were you when you saw your first UFO or extraterrestrial? You never seen an extraterrestrial, have you?
I've never seen it. Oh, okay. Not to my knowledge. If you walk around the Las Vegas Strip after 2 a.m., there's a pretty strong chance. But I was 9 years old. This was 1977. I was living in Eastern Kentucky at that time. And where our house was kind of was up on a tall hill and it overlooked this little valley area. And you could clearly see the local steel mill that we had back when American towns used to have a steel mill.
Oh, yeah.
And there was this one large building where they did most of their work in that, like, because there would be like mile and a half long coal trains rolling straight in there. And they would roll into this giant aircraft hangar sized building where they would dump the coal off that they use for actually making the steel and firing the furnace and all of that stuff. And then they'd dump them off and then they'd roll out the other side. So large building.
Wow.
And it was for 1976, that was the bicentennial. They had like this big lit up electronic kind of flag that looked like it was moving. to be fair, if you saw it today, you'd be like, that is pretty crappy. But for 1976, it was pretty amazing. But I had gotten in the habit of always looking over there because it was always something new, something different, you know, on the landscape. And after 77 rolled around, they just unplugged it. But I'd gotten in the habit of whenever I was walking outside, I would look over there and see it. And I did the same thing. I looked over there and there was this brilliant white, like oblong kind of shaped light on the very top of the building, like on the opposite end of like where the flag part was. And it was easily as big as one of those railroad cars that would go in full of coal. So it was pretty large. I was looking at it and it's like, is that like a helicopter? Is the building on fire? But it was slowly moving from one end of the building to the other. And when I was looking at it, when it got a little further along where I could actually see it a little, because it was like welding bright. It was kind of hard to look directly at.
Right.
And as it got a little further along, I could sort of squint my eyes a little bit and I could see that it wasn't actually on the building. It was well above the building, slowly moving from one end to the other. And my little sister was in the garage that I was standing right next to, messing with her bike or whatever it was. And little sisters doing what little sisters do. I was like, something in my head told me if I look away from this, it's not going to be there when I look back. So I'm just locked onto it. And I'm like trying to get my sisters like, you got to come and look. There's a thing. I think it might be like a UFO or something. And of course, my little sister's doing what they are. You're trying to trick me. I'm not going to go look at that stupid thing. I'm arguing with her. Well, I'll still try to look at it. I finally was like, would you just come over here and look at it? Gone. Just vanished. Now, so I go to school the next day. I'm in elementary school. And this is a very public area. You could, and it's kind of out in the open. Where you could see this for miles. And there's like a big shopping center right in front of where that is and two main highways that like kind of cross right in that area. I was like, somebody else had to have seen this, as big as and bright as it was. So I started asking my friends at school. I was like, hey, did you see a light over top of the... Which then immediately turned into kids being kids. Like, huh, you're the UFO guy now.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So, rude.
It was like the latter part of the year, so I didn't have that. You know, we took our summer break, and it didn't follow me into the next year where, like other childhood traumas, you make one mistake or, you know, have an accident of some type where you have to live it down until you're a senior in high school kind of thing. That didn't follow me, but I certainly got that taste that maybe you shouldn't tell people when you see something weird.
Oh. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, back then I understand that because of the times and everything. Now, this was before you went into the service, correct?
That's way right. Before. This was in 1977.
How? Well, if you don't mind me asking, how old were you in 1977?
I was 9.
Okay.
And in the early part of 77.
So you were a kid. My birthday's in November.
Yeah, my birthday is in November, so you're like that. When you start doing the math and all that stuff, it's like, oh, no, you're 10. It's like, no, I was still 9 when this happened. This in the earlier part of this, it's like March or April, something like that. But anyways, I ended up joining the Air Force again, reflect in 1985 when I right after I graduated high school, because we actually moved to upstate New York and then moved back to the exact same town there in Kentucky for my senior year of high school. And right when we moved back in, that's when that same steel mill shut down. So now there's like 45-year-old dudes bagging groceries at the local Kroger because that's the only job they could get, you know. Kind of a thing. Not because, you know, that's all they were qualified for. It's like, these were like engineers and people that have been working over at that steel mill all their lives. And they just had to get a job, get some kind of money coming in and bagging groceries. So there were zero prospects for me getting like that beginner level, you know, post high school kind of job to make money. Cause I had no money for like college and no idea what I was going to do. So the Air Force was a very good escape plan for me. One, raise some money for college, do the GI Bill and all that.
Yeah.
And two, to get the hell out of there, away from that area, because there were zero prospects for any kind of livelihood there. But my second sighting came in 1999, where I'd moved around a couple places, and I'm still I'm right now just outside of Wichita, Kansas. Mm. We got a base here. And I was visiting a friend with a friend of mine who lives right in the downtown area. And we were going to go into the backyard and like smoke cigars and tell tales and stuff like that. He goes to the bathroom. I walk out there just by myself at first. And I'm a big astronomy nerd. So if it's nighttime and I'm outside, I'm looking at the sky. My real background, I have star charts on my wall. This is my real background. So I just love looking at the sky like that. And when I went out, I stepped out. And of course, first thing I do is look up. Okay, get my bearings. Okay, that way's east, and there's that, and there's this. But you couldn't see that much because we were right in the middle of town. So all the light pollution from the town itself was washing a lot of the dimmer stars up. But I noticed like movement, like directly over my head, in the sky. It wasn't like on top of my head. But so I look and I could sort of see something moving, like almost directly over my head, slowly, silently moving to the east, which was the direction I was facing. And it was like looking at like a dark gray on a black background. You can't really make the edges. You think there's something there, but it's so close to the night sky, it was really hard to make out. No lights, no sound. I wasn't even sure I was really seeing something. I thought I was like, I'm playing tricks on. I did just come from outside, so my light, my eyes aren't night sky adjusted. But again, astronomy nerd, I look in front of where it's moving, and okay, there's a group of stars there, and it starts blocking those stars out as it starts moving further.
Nah.
So it was something physically there that was blocking the stars. And, I think if I had to say what shape it was, I'd have to go with triangle. But because we've certainly heard black triangle stories from UFO folks before.
Oh, yeah.
But what I observed from as much as I could tell of it, and I'm, willing to change my mind on this, but is when you think of something that's triangular shaped, you think one of the points of the triangle is going to be the moving forward part, right? Because that would be sort of aerodynamic. What I saw was one of the flat sides moving forward, and it was like over my head and moving away as I was looking at it. The whole thing only lasted 10 or so seconds, not very long. By the time it got closer enough to the horizon where it just melded into everything else and just got washed out. I think the only reason I actually saw it at all was from the lights of the city kind of underlighting, the bottom of it little bit. So.
Wow.
But as far as actually sightings, that's it. I've only got those two. That's
The reason you went into the Air Force, would that be because of you seeing?
Well, to backtrack a little bit, back when I was nine, I kind of got shamed into, admitting to seeing something weird in the sky with all my friends. I took an interest in it on my own, and we had in my elementary school, we had this very tiny library that, the total books might fill the walls and, floor to ceiling in the room I'm in right now, my spare bedroom. It wasn't a lot, but they had a pretty wide range of stuff. And, they did have like the combination Bigfoot UFO Loch Ness Monster type book and, things like that. And I went through all of the UFO weird stuff for kids kind of books that they had. And I was asking the librarians, like, is there anything else that you've got here in the shelves? And she's like, well, we do have this one book. And it's sort of in our look, because where I lived was in eastern Kentucky, right where Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia meet. And I've got kinfolk all over West Virginia. I was like, well, there's this one book about some stuff that they saw a few years back in West Virginia. It's called The Mothman Chronicles by John Keel. And they've since, you know, made a movie about it. It's not very good. Nothing like the book. But that, if you've ever read that, that's all about the Mothman story, which I grew up on Mothman stories because that was, you know, our local legend kind of thing. And in John Keel's book, that's where you start getting like more detailed information about people's encounters with like Men in Black and also, you know, UFOs and, you know, weird cryptids besides Mothman in that West Virginia, that central West Virginia, northern West Virginia area. There's just some places in this world, like that area in West Virginia, that, you know, and then you've got like Mount Shasta, Skinwalker Ranch,
Ranch.
The meadow down in Georgia or Alabama or wherever it is, because they're secret about it, that you're getting all of the paranormal all in one spot, where you're getting ghost stuff, you're getting cryptid stuff, you're getting UFO stuff, all of it happening in this, you know, the Bridgewater Triangle up in the Northeast.
Oh, yeah.
Where there's a lot of weird things all happening within this very small area. You can't tell me that that's five or six different things all happen to be occurring all right in that area. Because for a long time, a lot of people that were investigators of all of these things is, you know, the Bigfoot people made fun of the UFO people, and the UFO people made fun of the ghost people and all that. And they all thought they were all the other groups were all full of crap. But where we start hearing about these places where everything's happening, that kind of tells me that these things are interrelated somehow. There's something else going on.
Right.
And that's that idea, I think, is spreading and becoming a little more open for a lot of researchers and stuff like that out there, that we're all it all means something. It's all kind of might be the same source.
Well, you said Alabama, Georgia. Well, I am literally from LA, Lower Alabama, and I saw my first UFO when I was about 7 or 8 years old in my backyard. Well, it wasn't in my backyard, but I was in my backyard.
Right.
And I think mom or dad just got through watching Unsolved Mysteries or something about a UFO. And I was looking at the stars, and all of a sudden it like blinked and shimmered and then shot off to the left, like so fast. Like it couldn't have been anything, you know, to my knowledge now, but a UFO. Then after seeing what I saw on the TV, I was like, oh, and I just ran inside. I didn't want to be taken.
That's right.
But
those little green guys start popping up.
Speaking of the little green guys, I still want to go into your history. Sure. So we're going to have to backtrack a little bit, because it's your history in the Air Force that kind of, and your knowledge of astronomy that kind of has me intrigued with your knowledge of all the stuff that's going on.
But before we get too deep into that, I'll go ahead and throw out the disclaimer. I say when I bring up, I was in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force for 24 years. December of 1985 to December of 2009. Don't even know what year it was. I left. But it was still a while ago now, I can say it. But at no time other than at my friend's house in 1999 did I ever see anything UFO related. Never. It was never job. I was an aircraft mechanic. I don't know where the UFOs are. I'm sorry to tell you that. But You can go ask David Grush. He seems to know all that stuff. Won't tell you, but he seems to say he knows where it's all at. But yeah, just throwing out that first before we get into anything else.
No problem. No problem. I understand. I was in the military myself, so got to put the disclaimer out there.
You really do. You do not do secret medical experiments on town folk or anything like that. Yeah.
No, but no. Yeah.
But because of, I'm also an insomniac. I only sleep like 5 hours a night.
Hey, that's me.
Most of the time. Yeah. And being away, sitting there, waiting, like, you know, doing the calculations, looking at the clock. If I go to sleep right now, I'll get 6 hours and 20 minutes of sleep. If I go to sleep right now. If I go to sleep right now, it'll be 6 hours.
I think the weekends are the only time I get anything over 4 to 5 hours of sleep.
The only time I sleep, I should say 5 to 6, because it used to be I was only doing 3 for the longest time. But since I've retired, I've gotten lazy and sleep a whole 6 hours sometimes.
A whole 6 hours.
But it's usually, if I'm sleeping longer than that, it's usually because I'm sick. Like if I come down with a bug or something like that, I will sleep right through it to try and heal, I guess. But during my time when I was in, I worked a lot of odd shifts all the time because I didn't mind. I traveled a lot, saw a lot of parts of different parts of the world. Not sleeping at night and things like that, instantly gravitated to and have always been a giant Art Bell fan. So,
yes, Art Bell.
That kind of rekindled a lot of the things that I experienced and saw and read about from when I was a kid. And that kind of like was always in the back of my head. You know, I saw something strange in the sky, I wouldn't immediately go, ah, aliens. And, nobody should do that. You got to rule out the things that it could also be. It's like, okay, something from millions of miles away or another dimension or another time or whatever. Or it's just a plane. You know,
it's just a plane.
Which one is more likely? Start with that. Okay, why isn't it a plane? Well, it didn't have flashing lights or it was acting weird. It was doing weird maneuvers. Okay, maybe it's something else, you know, and so on and so on. You got some critical thinking about just seeing something weird in the sky. A lot of people jump to conclusions. Believe it, I wanted to be aliens and then come down and we crack open a beer and tell tall tales of whatever they've been up to. But you got to be serious about it.
Sometimes, yeah. Well, not sometimes. All the time, yes. You need to be serious about it because, you know, a lot of... okay, I'm going there. A lot of the media likes to tell tall tales. So,
what?
All the time, every day.
You mean the media sometimes doesn't tell the total truth?
Or any of the truth, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. I know we were having a conversation at Bordertown last year pertaining to when I was talking about the UFO light in Destin, Florida. And I'm trying to write my brain because I've told that situation to so many people. Did you tell me that you knew about that or you haven't heard about that?
I'd heard about there's a lot of, spook lights and things like that that happen in a lot of different places. You know, that one spot over in Norway is super popular about it. Just are they earthquake lights? Is this a natural phenomenon? Is this, there's several different places where they have spook lights and stuff like that.
They are.
No, because the ones that I saw were like right over a local airport. Mm-hmm. And then years later, it pops up again on the news. 3 UFOs UFOs seen over the water and they were orange. And it's like, why do they always come in threes and why are they orange? Is it just one huge UFO that's got 3 lights on it? Now, did you hear about the mothership out there?
The one that the craft that we're seeing at Earth are based on the mothership that's somewhere else in the solar system.
Yeah,
it's kind of commuting from Jupiter to here. And I could see where that would make sense, because most of the craft we see are, you wouldn't think it would be. See, this is another problem, is we're trying to put our human ideas and of how something like that would work, which obviously it's way ahead of us technologically. But it would be like Columbus trying to explain an F-22. Yeah, that how that works and how it's able to move so quickly and why it's so loud when it buzzed over the Nina Pint in Santa Maria. Trying to apply, because the big argument now is you get a lot of scientists that even like 10 years ago would have been like, ah, no, there's no way. We're probably all by ourselves. There might be something on the other side of the galaxy, but we'll never, because it's so far away. They've kind of eliminated that first part, but they're still hanging on to their little death grip to the, it's star systems are far too far away for them to ever get here.
Yeah, okay.
We don't have to go that far back in our own history for times where sailing across the ocean would have been ridiculous. You're going to fall off the edge of the Earth because it's flat. It's not flat. I have a globe sitting right over here. Don't make me get it up. But it's
flat one of those
things that... Yeah, I've had my battles. I've had my battles. But, we won't get off on that. But, trying to explain something that's obviously way higher tech than anything that we're used to dealing right. with sciences that we haven't figured out yet, technologies and just the hardware and everything else that we don't know how to do yet. It's a little difficult to sit there and say, well, it's so far away, they could never get here. When we've had the idea of a warp drive, like in Star Trek, all of that stuff is kind of based on, you know, theories and stuff like that. We can imagine it.
Right.
It's a stupid amount of power to do that, because you're actually compressing the space-time in front of the ship and expanding it behind your ship. So in essence, it's like you're sliding downhill.
Oh, God.
You're just going that way. And you're actually, you're talking about bending of space-time itself. You know, it's instead of
taking... Well, that'd be kind of like space, not space travel, time travel.
Actually, probably not that far off. If that's something you've mastered, time travel probably wouldn't be that far behind it. To a limited extent. But again, we don't know. But basically, this is the same. Instead of you sitting in a rocket traveling in space, and even if you were traveling at the speed of light, the nearest star, you're going to be traveling for 4 years. The light from our sun takes 4 years to get to the nearest star to us.
Oh.
The same, you know, we can look at that star in the sky, and the light that we're seeing started its journey from that star 4 years ago.
That is crazy.
Big. Like, really, really big. It's the distances involved are pretty crazy and kind of mind boggling. I mean, even just within our own solar system, because the speed of light is a little over 186,000 miles per second.
Mm hmm.
And it takes the light from the sun to get to your eyeballs here on Earth, takes about 8 minutes. That's fairly far away, with, you know, speed of light wise. So speed of, and according to Einstein, speed of light's the natural speed limit. Can't go faster than that. But there's those tricks where you're actually, instead of like you walking across the living room to get to the kitchen, you're basically pulling the carpet between there and, you know, between those two rooms and squishing it up together where you're only going a short distance rather than walking the entire regular distance is basically what they're looking about when they say warp drives and stuff like that.
That makes sense. Crimson Angel in the Twitch chat stated, we would have to be completely oblivious to think we are the only living beings in the universe or further. We can't be. That would be totally, for lack of better word or words, it would be lonely and boring to think.
Yeah, I think it's extremely arrogant.
Oh, yeah.
To think that we're the only ones. We're the best. You know, because and there's been a lot of people that have come up with theories and ideas, the Drake equation and all of these different ideas of, according to the math, there should be all these races out there. How come we haven't seen them? It's like, okay, it was only this past year, like we had the Webb telescope that's gone up to where you might be able to detect something big around another star system, much less the planets and everything else. So prior to that, there's no way that you can say, oh, I've got my binoculars here and I'm looking at that star. I think I can see Schoenflatter. No, it just wasn't within our capability to do prior to a couple of years ago.
Right. What are your thoughts on the government and their involvement in all this UFO stuff?
Well, it depends on which way we're talking about here, because there's really two different things going on at the same time. As far as we're talking about David Grush and talking to Congress, and then there's another office. It's like, I don't know what that guy's talking about. You know, stuff like that. There's two different things going on here.
Mm-hmm.
One is the government needed to come up. This is where the changeover from classic UFO stories to UAP came from, where they started using UAP all the time to try and get rid of you're the UFO kid type of attitude for the UFO thing. Really what it was is there were American service members at all over the world. You know, a ship docked at a harbor someplace, and there's like one low-ranking dude out there in the middle of the night, who's on watch, standing at his post, and sees this crazy thing fly around the ship a couple of times and then dart off. And it's all weird shaped. It's got wacky lights on it. Yeah, it wasn't a bird. It wasn't an airplane. It wasn't your standard type, Mavic drone or anything like that. It just looked weird.
All right.
They wouldn't say anything. They wouldn't report it because they didn't want people to go, oh, you're the UFO kid. You're cuckoo crazy. You're seeing UFOs. We're going to, because if you say that, like in the Air Force, if a pilot reports, 10 years ago, it's like, hey, there was this bunch of lights. They're zooming all around the plane when I was flying in this plane. They'd be like, yeah, that's nice. We want you to go talk to this doctor here, and you will not be flying for a while. You're going to fly a desk for a while.
Oh, my God. That would suck so bad. But now they're like praising them for it.
Well, and that's the thing is they had to develop this program to where, okay, we want military people to tell us if they see something weird, because the theory behind it is that probably China, probably Russia, probably Iran, places like that, they certainly have the ability to take a standard drone with a camera set up or some other sensor capabilities and put some wacky housing on it where it looks like flying pyramid or looks like a squid or it looks like just a weird sphere where you just don't, because China cranks out millions of commercial drones a year.
Oh, yeah.
How hard do you think it would be for them just to put some wacky housing on it that looks weird with some little blinking lights on it?
Right.
And something makes a weird sound when it flies around or something or is totally silent. That's not that far outside of the realm of possibility. Basically, they're flying drones around our military assets, around our military play areas, around our ships, around our planes, around our bases, and they intentionally make them look all wonky and weird so that people won't say anything because they don't want to have that UFO stigma on.
Right.
So they came up, okay, it's called UAP now, and we want to hear your story. Whatever it is, no matter how wacky, there will be no repercussions, and we're going to set up like a whistleblower thing so that if your boss, after you write whatever the report is, of whatever your sighting is, if your bosses somehow try and hold that against you, that you're some kind of Looney Tune because you saw something weird in the sky, that you're going to get demoted or you're going to be held back from promotion or you're going to fly a desk instead of a plane. That kind of thing. So that was like where they kind of started, is as far as the government thing here within the last few years. Of course, a lot of this talk was kicked off in 2017 when the New York Times ran the story with the three videos that the Navy and the Air Force had reported seeing these craft that they can't explain. Pilots that are out there buzzing around the ocean. And things kind of exploded out from that, where the one side where like the straight government shooters was like, okay, there's weird stuff out there. It's probably just drones and people that don't like us spying on us. But we need to know all the stories because if this represents some kind of technological leap that some other country has, not one of our allies, because they would have mentioned that at some of the meetings, and they haven't. So ask David Grush. He seems to know where all that stuff is. He won't tell you, but he seems to say he knows where it's all at. But yeah, so just throwing out that first before we get into anything else.
No problem. I understand. I was in the military myself, so got to put the disclaimer out there.
You really do. You did not do secret medical experiments on town folk or anything like that. Yeah.
No.
But because of, I'm also an insomniac. I only sleep like 5 hours a night most of the time. Yeah. And being awake, sitting there awake, like, you know, doing the calculations, you're looking at the clock. I go to sleep right now, I'll get 6 hours and 20 minutes of sleep. If I go to sleep right now, it'll be 6 hours.
If I go to sleep, the only time I get anything over 4 to 5 hours of sleep.
The only time I sleep, I should say 5 to 6, because it used to be I was only doing 3 for the longest time. But since I've retired, I've gotten lazy and sleep a whole 6 hours sometimes.
A whole 6 hours.
But it's usually, if I'm sleeping longer than that, it's usually because I'm sick. Like if I come down with a bug or something like that, I will sleep right through it to try and heal, I guess. But during my time when I was in, I worked a lot of odd shifts all the time because I didn't mind. I traveled a lot, saw a lot of parts of different parts of the world. Not sleeping at night and things like that, instantly gravitated to and have always been a giant Art Bell fan. So,
yes, Art Bell.
That kind of rekindled a lot of the things that I experienced and saw and read about from when I was a kid. And that kind of like was always in the back of my head. You know, I saw something strange in the sky, I wouldn't immediately go, ah, alien. And nobody should do that. You got to rule out the things that it could also be. It's like, okay, something from millions of miles away or another dimension or another time or whatever. Or it's just a plane.
It's just a plane.
Which one is more likely? Start with that. Okay, why isn't it a plane? Well, it didn't have flashing lights or it was acting weird. It was doing weird maneuvers. Okay. Maybe it's something else, you know, and so on and so on. Yeah. Some critical thinking about just seeing something weird in the sky. A lot of people jump to conclusions. Believe it. I wanted to be aliens and then come down and we crack open a beer and tell tall tales.
Right.
Whatever they've been up to. But you got to be serious about it.
Sometimes, yeah, well, not sometimes, all the time, yes, you need to be serious about it because, you know, a lot of, okay, I'm going there. A lot of the media likes to tell tall tales. So, all the time, every day.
You mean the media sometimes doesn't tell the total truth?
Dun, dun, dun.
Are any of the truth, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. I know we were having a conversation at Bordertown last year pertaining to, right?
The, you know, cool story, bro. Trust me. This really happened stuff. That ain't going to cut it anymore.
No.
Not especially anymore. When you have, when these same people saying these same stories that we've heard for dozens and dozens of years are saying this to Congress, sitting congressmen, trying to convince them that, you know, we've got these secrets. And to be honest, they did exactly what I said they should have done when they first said they were going to do it. It's like, here's what you do. All these congressmen sit on all these different military panels and stuff like that, and they have to figure out where all the money is going to go, you know, who gets allotted what, you know, amount of money out of which pot. And if you really want to get them interested, basically tell them that they're the stooge. They're tricking you. They've been spending billions of dollars on this, and they're telling you it's for, you know, $400 hammers and $600 toilets.
Oh my God, the $400 like fucking hammers. Jesus Christ.
You know, that money's really getting backdoored into figuring out how that UFO works, and they're not telling you about it.
No.
And that's basically what they did. So now you've got, you know, oddly enough, you know, elected officials kind of are arrogant and don't like being made fun of. What do you mean they're doing this or that? I sit on that committee that governs such things. I would know. Telling you because I've got all these people that told me that it is true. It's like, what? And it ends up getting really just, it turns into a circus fast.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know, okay, I'd like to believe all of these people that, you know, are government whistleblowers, but they're not really whistleblowing. They're telling us the same stories that we've heard over and over again for 20, 40, 50, 75 years.
Yeah.
And it's tiresome. And then they start, you know, it just happens to be that group is starting up their own little organization. Send us money. We'll build you a spaceship. Oh, no, it's all the money's gone. We're just going to dissolve and disappear, which one of those people did, too. Their little rock star out there saying, send us money. We can build you, you know, some kind of light speed drive and, you know, free energy for the planet and all those good things. And they took in millions of dollars from people and it was gone.
My gosh.
And the company was shut down. And now there's legal action against it because they were said they were going to provide a service, even if they'd come out with just a schematic. And say, okay, here's the design for it. It's going to require 3 million tons of plutonium or whatever it is to do it. Something unachievable. And they're like, oh, see, we could build this, but it's going to take so much of this raw material we don't have on Earth. But thanks for that cash. And there's a lot of stuff that, I hate to think everybody is just, it's just a cash grab for some of these people, but because honestly, they're not making that much money, you know, like showing up on news shows and getting like mini documentaries made about them, talking about however it is they came to be in those things. But the more they talk, the kind of like the less they say, but that also fills in little blanks because you've got other people that, The home researchers sitting at home in front of their computer right now, you can file your own FOIA request on things. Now, you're not going to get your answer back that you're probably looking for, but there is a specific way. It's sort of like AI. You have to word it very specific to get exactly what you want.
Yeah.
You know that. And there are some people that are very good at it, so they know the right ways to put those things out there, and they're starting to get results back. It's like, wait a minute. This guy said he was in charge of this UFO program, and it wasn't. Actually, that's not even a real program. He worked with this other program that sort of dealt with, I heard your reaction earlier. All of the Lula Zondo and all those cats, the To the Stars Academy started with this with Bigelow's Skinwalker Ranch.
In oh my God. Oh my God.
Now, I've watched the show, and there's some interesting things in there, but shooting rockets up all the time, I don't see where that's getting you a whole lot of progress, but they sure do like to send rockets up.
Oh, they do. That's for sure. Crimson Angel had a thing. She said that there is evidence in Egyptian, Aztec, etc. I just hope that when the life forms actually make an effort to fully communicate, we don't do what we normally do and destroy. I hope it's a friendly educational exchange. If not, we're screwed.
Using our own history, when a more advanced civilization comes in contact with a lesser advanced civilization, it doesn't work out that well for the lesser civilization. It's one of those things. I kind of go back and forth on it in my head sometimes, quite a bit, on a lot, because that's, I actually waffle a lot about all of this stuff because
you.
I know. I'm the most inconsistent ass around. Because I do believe, you know, yes, there's life out there, probably. Just playing the numbers. Just a numbers game. Just for the stars we have on our own galaxy, number of planets that they're discovering every single day, all exoplanets around all these stars.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly think microscopic life is everywhere. Even in our own solar system, I think. But... And that's just me kind of guessing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as an advanced civilization that would have, you know, the ability to, you know, build the internet and, you know, social media and things, cell phones and stuff like that, that's a little different. You know, and being able to basically build their technology where they're venturing outside of their own planet. That is going to be a much smaller number compared to, you know, microscopic stuff. But still, playing the odds, there should be quite a few of those out there. And true, it is a long-ass way between here and wherever star system they are from. But they're certainly keeping an eye on us because we're in that range of getting ready to develop stuff where we can go out past, you know, the moon. We've certainly sent probes out into our own solar system, a few of which have actually gone outside of the heliosphere. So technically, it is outside our own solar system. So,
you know, this stuff is really fascinating to me, especially after what Crimson's talking about with the Egyptians, because the Egyptians hieroglyphs, you see spaceships, UFOs, like we draw them out.
Right.
Today.
So some are more impressive than others. Some of the Incan stuff, it certainly does look like one of our Mercury, you know, astronauts in a little capsule, and they've got controls that they can serve.
Mm-hmm.
There's that one famous set of hieroglyphs where, like, one of them looks like a Black Hawk helicopter, one of them looks like a tank. It's like they were visited from aliens from 1980. Not that impressed.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I had someone on a previous podcast that I was on talk about that and talk about how they were way more advanced than we are even today back then.
Right.
And I don't understand how. I mean.
Well, if you look at a lot of ancient megalithic structures,
mm-hmm.
A little bit. For the pyramids themselves, where you really see it is some of the places like Machu Picchu, there's a lot of sites all over the world where they have these blocks making up a wall that they look all the world like they were poured in, like they were like a liquid they poured into a shape.
Yeah.
Is it perfectly aligned? You know, I can't fit a razor between the edges. You know, that old gag. But we don't know how to do that. And if this is from somebody from several thousand years ago, that, you know, doesn't have, you know, advanced metallurgy and machines and things like that that we use today to do a similar task, how did they do that? I mean, you know, when it comes to the pyramid, like the basics of the pyramid itself.
All right.
You can't underestimate the workforce of like millions of slaves, which is kind of what happened.
Right. To that's true.
Build it. So, but that doesn't explain how they got, you know, these giant 80 ton rocks from this quarry that's 50 some miles away by boat. And then, you know, offloaded it and then rolled it on trees. Is that why there's no trees anywhere around that whole desert? It's a desert. Where are they getting trees right? from?
Exactly.
There's problems with a lot of the explanations of how exactly they did it and all that. It doesn't help when you have historians and Egyptologists and things like that that I wrote a book on it. It's this way. It's no other way. I don't care what other evidence you come up that shows something different. It's my way or no way. You know, it's you see a lot of that with folks that start talking about ancient cultures. You know, was there an advanced culture, you know, before the end of the Ice Age?
Yeah,
that kind of stuff. And honestly, the way that you know, the Younger Dryas period, where we went from solid Ice Age, super hot, then super cold, and then a gradual rise to where we are today over thousands of years. So what caused this dramatic environmental change? Can't blame that on SUVs.
They would like to. Now, there has been so many different variations of types of UFOs out there. You've got the triangle shape. You've got the tic-tac looking one that I've actually seen. A friend of mine showed me a picture that they have taken of like the tic-tac one. There's also been the round one. Of course, it's the one with the little dome on the top and everything.
Classic saucer.
Yeah. Which one do you think is... Okay, let me see how to word this. Which one do you think is actually the most common? And do you think any of those are fake?
Well, a lot of people, you know, because, you know, I mentioned my 99 thing of think it was triangular shape. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, the black triangle stories are a little different from mine. There's usually lights on the points, you know, the three points and a big light in the middle, totally silent, buzzing around, stopping, going, you know, accelerated, you know, right angle turns, things like that that our normal aircraft cannot do. Some of them monstrously big, like several hundred yards big kind of thing. Some of them a little smaller. And a lot of people on the UFO side's like, oh, it's black triangle. That's our tick. That's what we got. How do you know that? How could it? And my problem with it is if the U.S. government had made something like that that can zip all around and right angle turns and be totally silent and you can't even see it flying around in the sky, they'd be hundreds of out there. They'd be stamping those out like crazy, and it would take over the world. You know, you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, some kind of skirmish in Eastern Europe between other countries when you got a bunch of those that could just blink into existence directly over top of them and, you know, shoot some phasers out of them or something. I don't know. I assume they got some kind of advanced weaponry to go with that. Even if it doesn't, even if it just has a classical bomb bay and can just drop bombs straight down on top of something, that's still way better than, you know, what we currently have. So they'd be using that a lot.
Thank you so much for listening to Exploring the Paranormal Perspective show with my guest, Enzo. Stay tuned for part two coming up soon. If you would like to see the show, you can go to my Ko-fi account, which is ko-fi/geeksparanormal, and help support me in editing these videos and getting them out there to you. You will also find real-life paranormal investigations on my Ko-fi account, and you can watch them live on my Rumble account at EPP Podcast, or you can watch on kick.com/geeksparanormal, twitch.com/geeksparanormal, or YouTube at Geeks Paranormal. Thank you guys so much for your support. Please, you can go to my website at exploringtheparanormalperspective.com, and on the front page, you'll see the link to my Kick account where you can watch me live. You can also find blogs on there for any future blogs that I come out with that will have images and clippings of things that have happened on the shows. So hit that like button, hit that follow button, hit the subscribe button if you would like to support me in my endeavor and to help you guys get more content from Exploring the Paranormal Perspective. Stay free, stay safe, always do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And until next time, see you guys later. Bye, y'all. In the dark, she finds the light. Streams are fun, she's out of sight. Every ghost and gaming fight, Geeks Paranormal shines so bright. In the dark, she finds the light, streams so fun, she's out of sight. Every ghost and gaming fight, Geeks Paranormal shines so bright. Ghosts and games all night, Geeks Paranormal's bright, just chatting through.